Welcome to the Can It Cook podcast. We hope you'll be encouraged to have an I'm third approach as you navigate family, leadership, and spiritual growth. If you're new to our conversation, welcome. It's so great to have you. Let's jump in.
Well, I cannot tell you how excited I am to introduce the podcast today. We're with one of our favorite Kennecott counselors ever. No one will ever forget her from her days at Kennecott, Amy Fry Otteson. And we're going to tell her story today. And it is a compelling story to tell. But Amy, before we get into your story about your sweet little boy, Gore, tell us about your days at Kennecott.
Oh, gosh. I remember the first time I ever went to Kennecott, I started off at K-1. And I went for a month. Back then, they had those month terms, which I loved. And I went every year until I couldn't go anymore as a camper. And then I went as a counselor. And it just was some of the best memories, honestly, of my life. And met the best friends of my life. And now my kids all go.
Yeah. And so tell us about your kids' journey at Kennecott.
Well, all three of them wanted to go, and they all started at an early age. And so now two of them have gotten too old. They're at Baylor now, but one of them is going to work there this summer. So they started off going when they were young as well, and went, honestly, until they left for college, and they love it. They love it like I did.
What aspect of camp kept your kids coming back?
You know, I think it was the friendships. I think they really felt like they met other Christian, strong, you know, faithful friends that I think were hard to find sometimes. And so that was a huge part of it. Obviously, they love the crazy fun nights and they love the K-Lives and the sports aspect 100%. I think it was a combination, but Kirk still talks about the cross talks and what an impact that had on him. So the counselors, the investment of people, you know, just into them and their spiritual walk.
And so, Amy, you were like twins with Mary, your best little buddy while you were there. Tell us about friendship at camp with Mary.
So Mary Underhill, her name was Underhill at the time. Yes, we met when we were 13 years old, and we were on our way to trip. And we, to this year, 40 years later, we are still very, very good friends. And she actually flew out here when all of this stuff happened that we're going to talk about today. She got on a plane and flew out here and sat with me in the hospital. So she has just been a faithful, incredible friend.
She is one amazing human being. Love yes. that girl. She, like you, is unforgettable.
Amy,
I love that you said you met your friend Mary when you were going on trip. And there's nothing that bonds a cabin closer than going on K-1 trip. And to this day, it is some of our K-1 campers. It's their most favorite time at camp. Really special memories. Yeah. Well, let's get into kind of our topic for the day. And Amy, you and your husband, Dave, you wrote a book called Giving Up Gore, When Our Worst Fear Becomes Our Greatest Gift. And so Gore, that happens to be your youngest of your three children, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about him.
Example. You know, Gore, he is just absolutely, of all three of mine, a daredevil to this day still. And I'm thankful I got him back just the way God made him. But yeah, he has no fear.
Oh my goodness. I love it. Well, in your book, Amy, you talk about being a cautious parent and how you were challenged to truly give your children to God. And, you know, that's a hard thing to do. But, you know, you write about this moment when you felt led just to ask God to test you and to test your faith. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think I was just going through a time. Obviously, I had three kids under the age of five and just feeling very afraid all the time that something bad was going to happen and kind of coming to a place realizing that I really needed to relinquish them to God and trust that God loved them more than me. And I had really worked on that and just started praying and just felt like I was at a place in my faith walk that I said, you know, God, I want you to test me. I distinctly remember saying, please just don't let it involve my kids. So here I'm setting parameters for God, but just asking him to show me or, you know, give me a test that I could just show my faithfulness to him.
And so, Amy, I will never forget July the 6th, 2010, when literally America was on our knees. It was a day that got out on the news wires. and it spread so quickly. And all the people who pray were praying for Gore. The day was a tragedy that no one will ever forget. Tell us about that day and take your time, Amy, and unpack it.
Yeah, it was a beautiful summer day in Colorado, and we were over at our cabin, which is just outside of Gunnison near Crested Butte. And, you know, Mary Lynn, a friend of mine, lifetime friend from college, from Baylor, was there with her little kids, and we just had the best day. And so we were getting kids bathed and noticed that Gore had slipped out of the cabin. I had just seen him. And in the cabin, and immediately, I mean, he wasn't even 2 years old, knew that he had slipped out of the back porch. And I just started a frantic search. I ran out of the cabin, and we have a very large irrigation ditch. It's almost like a small river that runs right behind our cabin, right off the Gunnison River. And I just thought there's no way that he got out the door and some, you know, so I just started looking everywhere else. And immediately I had about 20 people from my family. They all have cabins around us, and they started searching, and it just, the nightmare began right then. Everyone in a panic and a search.
So at that point, you know, you're thinking the worst case scenario, and everyone is searching, you know, what's the timeline like? How long is it before you find Gore, and what's the state in which you find him?
Yeah. You know, we all searched for just over 20 minutes. I knew it had been 20 minutes since he had walked out. And the ditch was so fast moving. My cousins were searching that, looking for him. It's so swift that it was hard for me to even walk in, but they were in there looking, all the outbuildings. So after about 20 minutes, my cousin, actually, we found out later, he had found him over 325 feet downstream, trapped underneath a log about 18 inches below the surface. So he had gotten caught on the log, and he pulled him, you know, walked towards me. I saw him coming, just kind of crying out, you know, trying to get everybody's attention from the back of our property. And when I first rounded the corner and saw Gore, I mean, he was lifeless, completely white as a ghost. You know, I knew, I assumed no one could survive being underwater for over 20 minutes. And at that point in time, I thought we'd lost him.
What was your heart doing at that time?
Oh, just breaking. I mean, I just thought this was it. This was the tragedy that I never imagined could have ever happened. And, you know, I was always very much in charge and in control. And how could I have let this happen? And I just was so guilt-ridden and broken that when they started CPR, my dad and two of my cousins started CPR immediately. I just left. I didn't think there was any chance that they could revive him. And, you know, honestly, Mary Lynn stepped in and started praying over him at that time, because I couldn't even stand to watch what was happening.
So after that, you know, obviously Gore's in the hospital, and you're there with him and your husband. And, you know, Mary Lynn, it sounds, she was with your other children. And, you know, kind of that first night, she read a Bible story to your other kids, and she had a special prayer for Gore. Tell us a little bit about what that was.
Yeah, we had been flown to Denver at that point in time. We had gone to the Gunnison Hospital and then wound up leaving on the helicopter to go to Denver. So she just stayed there with all, you know, my other two kids and her two little kids. And she said, I was just trying to do what came normal. And they said, my parents always read a little Bible story out of this book. And she said, okay, you guys just pick one out and I'll read it to you. None of those kids could read. So they picked one, and it was Ezekiel. It was a story about Ezekiel, that story about, you know, breathe life into these dry bones. That is what she had prayed on the side of the riverbank while they were trying to revive Gore. She found herself just repeating, please, God, please breathe life into these dry bones. And that night when she came up and was going to read the story, they pointed to the one they had chosen. And it was literally that verse that said, you know, can these dry bones live? And she just said in that moment, she just felt the presence of God, that he had the children pick out this exact story that she had prayed at the riverbank.
What was going on with your children?
they just were scared. You know, they were all so little that I think they were having a hard time understanding. They had seen the ambulance come on the property and so much of my family there crying and praying and just, you know, it was just a scene. And I think they just knew something really bad had happened. And so they had just said that Gore was hurt and that they had had to take him to the hospital. They weren't sharing anything with them yet of exactly what they didn't know exactly what was going on. So
the hospital must have been a roller coaster. What was the duration of the hospital like, and what were you and your sweet husband going through?
Yeah, he actually, Dave had come back to work for a few days. So he was on the Denver side of the tragedy. He had actually met the helicopter at the Children's Hospital, and I was still having to drive from Gunnison. And so he's living out his own side of the tragedy, just getting all the doctors coming to him saying, you know, he's never going to walk or talk and ever again. And there's a less than 1% chance that he has of survival based on everything that had taken place. They had figured out at that point he had been, you know, underwater and without a pulse for close to 55 minutes. It was just dire. It was not good. And so we just, you know, we obviously prayed. It was hard to even explain. The doctors had just really given us no hope. And so it was a waiting game of waiting to try to cool him and see if he had any brain function. Every single thing was pointing. It was not going well. Every test that they ran, everything that they did, he was intubated, basically kept asleep with a lot of pain meds those first few days.
What all were you feeling during those days, Amy? Can you recall some of the horror of the emotions you were going through?
Oh, just devastation. You know, I think just for a while feeling just completely like it was my fault. You know, finally had to go to God and say, God, you've got to help me so I can be present for what's about to happen. We were having to make some really difficult decisions. They had come and told us that that his body was shutting down, his organs were shutting down, you know, basically wouldn't even plan an MRI for him because they just didn't feel like there was any. They had him hooked up to an EEG. He wasn't showing anything, his brain function. They would come in every day and talk to us about how little they were seeing. That they just weren't seeing anything. That's what they would say. There's just nothing going on. That's what they would say to us. And it just began to feel like not one person had given us any reason to have hope. And I just felt like I'm going to have to make some hard decisions, things like donating his organs and things like that. So I just was praying for God to help me be there and make good choices and be as present as I could. And obviously be there for my husband, but he was really being there for me.
You know, earlier, Amy, you said there was a season where you just asked God to test you and to test your faith. And I can imagine those words coming back and you saying, okay, God, like, is this it? Is this you answering that prayer? And if so, like, why did you answer in this way? Or what's going on with this? And so tell us a little bit just about, you know, as you may be in those days sitting in the hospital or thinking back on asking God to test you, how was that kind of resonating in your heart through this tragic experience?
Yeah, I think when you're, you know, I've had people say to me, when you're in a situation like this, were you angry with God? And I said, oh gosh, it's such the opposite. You just cling to God, because I can remember thinking no one can help me. No one's going to be able to pull me out of this pit that I feel like I'm in from what has happened. And just knowing that God was the only person that really, truly loved my child like I did, or, you know, more than I did, is I think what I learned. But I just finally went to him and said, God, I need you to help me. And he really, in that moment, I just felt like God made such a clear message to me of, I am in complete control. Can you trust that? I am in complete control. And I think that moment for me, it just lifted this weight off of my shoulders of, if God is in complete control, which is what I had prayed, you know, test me and I'll trust you. And I think that in that moment, it really made me realize I trust him. I do trust him. And if I say I trust him, then I have to give Gore up and trust my son and whatever happened, good or bad, because it's not always going to be good. It's not always going to be good. And even if he chose to take Gore, I would still trust him and still find my faith. I knew I could survive on my faith in God and his plans.
And then, miraculously, the tide turned. What was that like?
Honestly, I think I've talked to people at the hospital since then, just doctors and nurses that were not Christians, were not believers, that just everybody felt the magnitude of the miracle. We couldn't believe. We were expecting the worst. We were expecting, I mean, they had, like I said, given us no reason to have any hope. And they said, we found out later, they even called up and said, are you sure you sent us the drowning victim? Because his brain was perfectly intact. And they couldn't understand how that could happen. And we knew it was God. And I think that's just what we kept saying to everybody that would listen to us. You know, we've been praying for this. We knew it was God. We knew this is a miracle. Nobody else could explain it.
And your emotions went where at that time?
Just sobbing, crying, celebrating, thanking God, you know, just hardly able to even stand when we first heard the news, just in disbelief of how good God was. Yeah, I mean, I had just been in such the depths of despair. And then I was just on this mountaintop of joy and celebration and knowing how it was going to affect everybody. I think just everybody could not believe what had happened.
Amy, my body has full chills right now just hearing you tell this story, because it really is just pointing to, like, this was only God, and there was no hope that you were getting from all these medical professionals. And I love that you said, and that is what made the magnitude of the miracle so large. And that puts God's glory so much on display, that is the only answer, that it was God alone. And so, I mean, how did you see, just, you know, through just the power of prayer, you know, and people who maybe were not believers getting to see the power of our God, like, how did you see that begin to affect the faith in those around you?
You know, I think it was that was everything, because I wasn't on any social media, but obviously, as Joe had stated, the word was out and people were just texting me, you know, just nonstop sending messages about the whole state of Texas is praying for you, or the whole state of Minnesota. People around the world were reaching out. People, I have no idea who they were, but they got behind this story and they were praying. And I was saying, pray for a miracle. Like, we need a miracle. Nothing else. He's not going to live unless we have a miracle. And so feeling like all these people were praying for Gore and his miracle, and then to get the news that there was nothing, no abnormalities in his brain, was so incredible. And then people started to feel like, I prayed for that. I prayed for that. And that was my prayer. And I think that changes people to feel like, I helped pray for this and this miracle occurred. You know, it affects their faith life.
How many days was he pretty much pronounced dead by the doctors?
It was, they woke him up. We got there Tuesday night, and it was about midnight Tuesday night to Friday morning. They woke him up.
Wow.
And so we sat there. I mean, we were in the hospital still another month after that, because of, he couldn't walk or talk. All the things he could do before, even though he had this perfect MRI, he couldn't walk or talk. But his brain was there. You could see his brain working. You could tell that it was completely the same child in there that was before. So that was just the 72 hours or whatever of just thinking, okay, how am I going to live my life? How am I going to live my life for my other two kids? How are my husband and I going to get through this? You know, those were the things I'm thinking about in the midst of this.
Isn't it amazing how one small child can affect the lives of so many around the nation and around the world? And that's what your book just comes alive with.
Yes. And I think, you know, even weekly, I would say my husband or I or Gore even get people come to them and tell them stories about how it affected them or affected their faith, or how they just read the book and it helped them through something they were going through. And so, yes, I think the miracle is broad. It is broad, and it has really helped people in their faith journey, just see how real God is, how tangible, how personal.
You know, I love just this reminder that I've been in the Gospels a lot lately and just reading about, you know, Jesus doing miracles. And a lot of times it says, you know, not only was he able, but he was willing. And I just hear that in your story for Little Gore, that we know God is able. He can do anything. But also he heard those prayers and he was willing to do that. And in that, he got glory. And you're continuing to just get to tell the story today. So walk us through just a little bit. You know, obviously Gore was very young when this happened. So what was it like even recounting the story to him as he continued to get older? Gore, let me tell you about your life and the miracles God did. And then would love if you just kind of end with telling us a little bit just on how Gore's doing today, what he's up to, and just what life looks like for him now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I used to try to read him the book, but I would just cry. And so he would take it from me and say, "Mom, I got this. I'll read it." So he would start to read it, you know, because I couldn't get through it. I would get too emotional. And so, you know, I think he knows, and we just have this giant box of all the cards and letters and gifts and, you know, and so just to see some of that stuff and go through some of that, you know, he realizes what God did for him. He's very aware of that. So he's honoring to that. And he tells people, you know, God saved me and that type of thing. So yeah, he shares his story now. Obviously at the time it was not something he really remembered, but he shares it now. And yeah, he's a sophomore in high school. He's 16 years old. He goes to Golden High and he's driving and he's got a job and he's playing football and he loves to fly fish. So, I mean, he's busy. He's busy, but he's just got a deep love for people. I mean, a kindness. He would do anything for anybody. He hugs me about 10 times a day and says he loved me about 10 times a day. And he loves his friends well and his family well. Very, very, still no fear, no fear. So that I'm still on my knees.
I was gonna say, he's keeping you on your knees, Amy.
And so he showed up at K2 football this summer.
Yes.
And we got to meet and talk, and he told me that he was your son, and I remembered praying for him. Oh my goodness, I could not believe that I was actually there with him. It was so joyful, and what a great kid. What a great young man he is.
Thank you. Only God, only God. He wouldn't be here. Tell you what, that's what I said. I get almost more emotional today because I realized what I would have missed, and God has just been so good and so faithful. So it's been incredible.
Amy, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And, you know, you mentioned this earlier that not all stories have the ending that you got. Yeah. And we acknowledge that. And so for those of you that are out there and maybe didn't get the miracle you thought you were going to get, know that it is still the same God that loves you. Mm. And just as he met this family in their worst moments in the hospital, and they experienced his presence and the power of prayer, God wants to meet you with those things as well. Yes. And so, again, just thank you for sharing just your story of hope. And I pray that, you know, everyone that's listening today would just be reminded that God loves for his children to cry out and that he allows us to walk through some really hard things, but ultimately we get to see him use all of those things for our good and so that his glory can be on display. So thanks again.
Absolutely.
Amy. And so Bethann, I'm holding this dear, precious book that Amy and her husband wrote. And here's a little picture of Gore on the back giving us the thumbs up. I guess we can go to Amazon and find Giving Up Gore. Is that right, Amy?
Yes, it is on Amazon. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, it's already being reprinted. What a great read this will be for anyone who wants to celebrate a miracle with
That's
Amy.
Right.
Thanks for having me and just listening to the story. And I do hope it just helps others.
Oh, absolutely. We believe that it will. And, you know, that's I think, the best part of after we've walked through something hard, you know, is getting to share with others and how we get to share in the comfort that God gave us. We get to give that gift to others. And so we do pray that this would be a blessing and comfort and encouragement to others. And so with that, we'd love to pray for you, Amy, and for your family and for our listeners today. God, thank you for just the opportunity today to again, just listen to a story, God, that really is all about you, God, and about your power, God, and about just the way that you hear us and you answer prayers, Lord, and how you defy odds, how you bring hope when there is no hope, Lord. That is the beauty of the gospel. And God, we thank you that you chose to save little Gore's life, and that to this day, he's getting to proclaim, God, what you did and who you are, Lord. And we just pray that as we've gotten to listen to this amazing story today, that those that are walking through really hard times or who have walked through really hard times, God, that they would just be met just with the truth, Lord, that you are with them, that you love them, and that you see them, Lord, and that there is hope beyond hope, God, even if we don't experience that ultimately until we get to heaven with you. And so, God, we pray that you would continue just to use Gore's life just to speak to, God, your goodness, Lord, and that you would continue just to help him to grow into the man that you've called and created him to be. God, thank you for every listener out there today. God, we give you all the honor, all the glory, and all the praise. It's in your name. Amen.
Please subscribe to our podcast today to stay up to date with the latest episodes. If this podcast has helped you in any way, please consider rating us, writing a review, or sharing it with others so we can continue to build you up with an I'm Third approach to family, leadership, and spiritual growth. For more information about the podcast, visit CanacookPodcast.com. And for more information about Canacook, you can visit Canacook.com.